Audio Renaissance presents Ender's Shadow by Orson Scott Card. Read for you by Scott Brick and Gabrielle DeCure. With Stefan Rudnicki, Stephen Hoy, Eric Luke, Christian Noble, Victoria Von Roth, and Orson Scott Card. Part 1. Urchin. Chapter 1. Poke.
You think you found somebody, so suddenly my program gets the axe.
It's not about this kid that Graf found. It's about the low quality of what you've been finding.
We knew it was long odds. But the kids I'm working with are actually fighting a war just to stay alive.
Your kids are so malnourished that they suffer serious mental degradation before you even begin testing them. Most of them haven't formed any normal human bonds. They're so messed up they can't get through a day without finding something they can steal, break, or disrupt.
They also represent possibility, as all children do.
That's just the kind of sentimentality that discredits your whole project in the eyes of the IF.
Poke kept her eyes open all the time. The younger children were supposed to be on watch, too, and sometimes they could be quite observant, but they just didn't notice all the things they needed to notice, and that meant that Poke could only depend on herself to see danger. There was plenty of danger to watch for. The cops, for instance. They didn't show up often, but when they did, they seemed especially bent on clearing the streets of children. They would flail them with their magnetic whips, landing cruel, stinging blows on even the smallest children, haranguing them as vermin, thieves, pestilence, a plague on the fair city of Rotterdam. It was Poke's job to notice when a disturbance in the distance suggested that the cops might be running a sweep. Then she would give the alarm whistle, and the little ones would rush to their hiding places till the danger was past. But the cops didn't come by that often. The real danger was much more immediate. Big kids. Poke, at age 9, was the matriarch of her little crew. Not that any of them knew for sure that she was a girl. But that cut no ice with the 11 and 12 and 13-year-old boys and girls who bullied their way around the streets. The adult-sized beggars and thieves and whores of the street paid no attention to the little kids except to kick them out of the way. But the older children, who were among the kicked, turned around and preyed on the younger ones. Anytime Poke's crew found something to eat, especially if they located a dependable source of garbage or an easy mark for a coin or a bit of food, they had to watch jealously and hide their winnings, for the bullies liked nothing better than to take away whatever scraps of food the little ones might have. Stealing from younger children was much safer than stealing from shops or passers-by. And they enjoyed it. Poke could see that. They liked how the little kids cowered and obeyed and whimpered and gave them whatever they demanded. So when the scrawny little 2-year-old took up a perch on a garbage can across the street, Poke, being observant, saw him at once. The kid was on the edge of starvation. No, the kid was starving. Thin arms and legs, joints that looked ridiculously oversized, a distended belly. And if hunger didn't kill him soon, the onset of autumn would, because his clothing was thin, and there wasn't much of it even at that. Normally she wouldn't have paid him more than passing attention. But this one had eyes. He was still looking around with intelligence. None of that stupor of the walking dead, no longer searching for food or even caring to find a comfortable place to lie while breathing their last taste of the stinking air of Rotterdam. After all, death would not be such a change for them. Everyone knew that Rotterdam was, if not the capital, then the main seaport of hell. The only difference between Rotterdam and death was that with Rotterdam, the damnation wasn't eternal.